When it comes to growth, it's all about 10x, not 10%. Welcome back to Skillscape. I'm your host, Justin Chu, and today we talk to Vincent So, founder of Inspect Element. We talk about growth funnels, growth hacking, and why product strategy is a bit like baseball and poker. This has been the most engaging conversation to date, and I hope you enjoy. Catch you later. Thank you so much for coming in on the podcast, Vincent. I'm so excited to have this chat with you. And thanks for coming in on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
To give us a, to round this discussion a little bit, could you give us a quick introduction to, your past experiences as a product manager and sort of where you are at right now in your journey as an entrepreneur?
Sure. So I think I've been in this business for around 8-9 years. So I started off working on my own startup when I first graduated at 2013. Unfortunately, back then, there were not much resources, and then, I wasn't mature enough to actually launch a startup. So we launched an app. It's called Friendzone, basically an app to help you to match friends. We didn't even survive the first year. It couldn't pass product market fit. So it got me thinking, maybe it makes sense for me to actually join a startup to learn, what is the actual product development, what is actual growth. What is a pain point that every startup is facing in different stages. So I was quite fortunate that I joined a very good startup called OneSky. It's a local startup which we serve clients over the world, such as Airbnb, Grab, stuff like that. And then I was at Google WEN, working as a product manager leading growth. And also later on, I was invited to go to Croak. Back then, I was the first product manager in there, and I was also focusing on growth. So been there for 4 years, it was a great experience. And now me and my partners, we are running a venture builder, a company called Inspect Element. So basically what we do is to help startup to scale and to grow. So we help them by being an interim head of X, also provide consultancy. And if they need the money, which are in different stages, especially early stage, we'll help them for certain money, to help them go through the product market fit. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Thanks so much for the introduction. And I can't wait to get started with the discussion. And so for today, I really want to look at the growth funnel as sort of a framework. And I know that you're a huge fan, of the concept that, in startup world, it's about 10x, right? Not really about the 10%. So to give us also just a quick, to anchor our discussion also, can you give, for our audience that's not too familiar, can you give us a quick introduction to sort of what that growth funnel is, how it's used and why it's important, for entrepreneurs to be aware about?
Got it. Yeah, I mean, growth is not a term that is specifically for startup. The term actually, exists in different industries. But for us, growth is quite a specific term. So I think this term actually started at around 10-ish years ago. So when a guy called Sean Ellis, he brought up the term growth hacking. So in the past, growth hacking is basically just about a more modern style of marketing. So they thought about, hey, when we are tech companies, when we are doing software, but we're still using traditional TV ads, outdoor ads, and this is not quite effective, especially if you're a small startup, you have limited budget, and then it's hard for you to calculate ROI, right? But putting this context in current day, it doesn't actually translate anymore, because right now, when you place a Facebook ad or when you do anything, it's ROI driven, right? So in fact, this growth hacking term also evolved quite a lot. And then nowadays, when we talk about growth, we usually talk about, hey, how do we actually, help the users to get to the core of the product as fast as possible and also as repeat as possible. So the term growth actually is important in any aspect, because if you're early stage startup, maybe you focus more on the users. When you're a mid-stage startup, maybe you focus more on retention. And then if you're in later stage, maybe you focus more on the monetization. So literally, growth is just like a finance team, which, all the people have to care about finance, but you have certain team that are delegated to look into the finance. So it's growth. In general, startup will have a growth team or, people who actually work on growth. So just now, Justin, you mentioned about the growth funnel. So we always talk about in the past that, hey, we have a funnel, usually what we call ARRR as the most traditional way. So meaning that we acquire the users into the product and then we activate them, meaning that getting them to try out the core features for the first or second time. And then the third is the R, so which is the retention. Hopefully we can bring them back as recurring as possible. Hopefully they don't churn. And then the fourth one is revenue, meaning that, hey, if they are coming that often, like how do we actually monetize the users? And then the last one is referral, which is like if you're active users, if you're a big fan, like can we actually help you, make you to be our active endorser to refer us. So framework like this, is the core principle. So of course, nowadays, they all also have some new framework, which is called RARA, which is kind of reorganizing a bit on the core principle. But overall, like the methodology is the same, like how do we actually help to acquire the users into the product? And then how do we actually get the most out of it?
Yeah, you're right. I also appreciate that you said, growth hack, it's not a new term. It's been around for the past 10 years. Sean Ellis, everyone also knows about, the father of growth hacking, right? But you're also right in saying that the term has evolved over the past 10 years. But I think throughout sort of that evolution, what has stayed consistent and what is very hallmark about sort of this idea of growth hacking is that, this like products really have to be nimble and sort of really being able to grow the customer base in all different aspects of the funnel, right? As a, I know you're a venture builder right now, but I know with your past experiences at GoGoVan, now GoGoX and Klook, right? You want to accelerate your marketing funnel in all its aspects, right? Which parts of the growth funnel for you, right, when you think about it, is very key when you want to grow 10x instead of just 10%?
Got it. Yeah, I guess one huge aspect that because right now actually more and more people are in the industry, and that is definitely a good trend. Hopefully, in Singapore or in the Western side, like there are many professional growth people, and we are seeing the trend. So when we talk about this, and then some common pitfall that we see is that given growth is in general most suitable for tech products. So either it's an app, it's a website, it's a SaaS. But the principle is that you have a digital product in general. So a huge pitfall that we see is that when we focus too much on the growth marketing, meaning that we are pressing different ads to acquire users, you definitely see some incremental growth. For example, hey, if I A/B test a certain ad, or if I'm testing a new ad placement style, or if I'm twisting a budget a bit, you will definitely see some growth in there for sure, and then it's a good thing. But I think what differentiates from 10% to 10x or 100x is the deep knowledge about your product. Because when we just talk about the traditional ARR, right, or any other aspect, the principle is that once you actually bring the users into the product, you actually have to let them to experience the product. Is the fundamental core principle, right? So seeing if you work for a fintech company, or if you are a crypto trading platform, and then you're pricing at like, hey, you're trying different perceived values, or you're trying different ad type, but then they actually didn't experience trading coin for the first time, or they actually understand, hey, what does trading coin means to me, or the value that they can get from this platform. So I think you have a limited capacity on what you can get. So I what I see is that product actually goes hand in hand with growth, because right now so many marketers, they focus too much on the upper funnel, meaning that the growth marketing. Yeah. But the core principle is that, hey, product is also as important or if not even important than the early stage funnel. Yeah.
Right. No, I really appreciate that, because I think you're right. I think many times we get caught up with, okay, how do you get viral? How do you get very aggressive marketing? But then people don't think of growth as maybe like hand in hand with like the product, right? That also brings me to the next question, right? So actually in terms of the product itself, right? So in parallel to growing the funnel, you're also improving the product, right? And as a lean startup, I guess you want to experiment and you want to really constantly iterate on the best version of the product, right? For you, in your past experiences drawing from that, how does that process look like for you?
Got it. So yeah, it's a really great question, because as we just talked about, product actually comes hand in hand with growth. But on the other side is like, in general, you have product team before you have a growth team, right? So how does actually both works together? So what we usually see is that growth team comes after you have a product market fit. And it's hard to say how long it takes or how much it takes for you to get the product market fit. But in general, right, I think if you're validated by external parties, say if you have investors, like usually it will come in around pre-A or series A, or in a more early stage, maybe in a seed round. So by that means, like the product is already there. So what we usually do is that two areas. One side is that, hey, the core product team, which, you know, their focus is not only on growth, but more like, you know, how do we focus on the customer experience? How do we actually build the product better? And on the other side is, hey, like, you know, I used to lead the product growth team. So we actually work together with the product managers. Like, we are product managers ourselves, but what we focus on is what we talk about, you know, how do we actually bring in users faster, and how do we actually bring them back faster? So in terms of lean startup, our methodology is usually about A/B testing. So A/B test is a huge concept of growth. Like, A/B test doesn't necessarily just have to be growth, right? But what we usually do is that we use A/B test to test our hypothesis, because like growth in general is similar to baseball, right? Like if you're a good growth team, in average, you know, around the average of the batting rate, but not necessarily that you have to hit, you know, a home run every time. So chances are that you have to take some risks, and then some of the chances you have to be more safe, right? So my methodology is usually like playing poker. So, you know, if you're a good growth team, you know, the core is that you're taking a certain risk while, you know, you are actually calculating the expected value. So given that, you know, maybe 6 to 7 out of 10, we are actually losing, right? We're actually making some wrong decisions, which is fine. Like, I guess the core is, you know, how to actually test enough product. So the core principle is that, hey, how do I actually modularize the whole thing? How do I actually build up a systematic framework that I can actually, you know, come up with the hypothesis? How can I actually make it as MVP as possible? And how can I test as fast as possible? So yeah, so I think the whole lean startup concept, or, you know, the whole MVP concept, actually comes very close with our growth team. Because if you're a product team in general, you're building core features. In some of the cases, it actually takes time. But for growth, like most of the cases, it's about experimentation. It's about testing. So, you know, the core is not only about, you know, what to test or you know, how to test it, but also to set up a framework on, you know, how do we test as fast as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like those two analogies to both baseball and poker. In terms of, you know, with poker, about calculating the expected value along with calculating risk and sort of balancing that, and then iterating on that product, right? Shifting our focus a little bit now towards the marketing funnel, the growth funnel, right? Let's break it down a little bit. So the first part of the funnel is acquisition, right? What are some of your thoughts on how can we hack that user acquisition process, especially, right, when given that a lot of these markets are basically somewhat saturated? How do we hack that acquisition?
I mean, it's a really good question. So in general, I would say among the ARR, A used to be the easiest, but to me, like, my two cents are that A is, like, the acquisition is actually getting harder and harder. So, you know, if you backtrack 10 years ago, you have lots of new channels that are unexplored. So, you know, one of the example that, you know, growth people actually always take as reference, you know, how Airbnb hack Craigslist, and then, you know, post all the stuff on Craigslist itself, and then now, you know, stuff like that don't come that often anymore, and then, you know, there are not much new channels in general. So if you're doing acquisitions, chances are that, you know, you'll be mostly focusing on, for example, Facebook ad, IG ad, you know, different type of advertisings. So I would say acquisition, I guess the core principle is, like, if you're in the early stage or if you're in the mid stage, I guess just focus on a good ratio. So what we call a good ratio is that, in general, hey, are you getting actually 3 to 4x of the lifetime value over your acquisition cost? So given the acquisition cost is actually pretty hard to manipulate or control, because, like, in general, this is kind of like a huge marketplace which everybody is bidding on the price. So you will see, hey, there's a such a huge drop when it's COVID, and then now, you know, it bounced back quite a bit. So that part is actually quite hard to control. So the core is, you know, how do we actually being able to optimize the LTV? So given that when we're talking about LTV, right, so this is more down funnel. So going back to about acquisition, right? So I guess the core principle is, you know, are we getting a fair price? You know, are we getting enough values out of the users? So I guess that's pretty much a core concept in here. But in general, I think startup, if you are in the B2C space, if you're, you know, pre-series B, I think no need to focus that much on exploring new stuff, because one side is that, you know, what we talk about, having enough budget with decent LTV is pretty good. And on the other side is new channels always comes in. So you still need time to squeeze those opportunities. For example, if you're targeting young people and then you see, hey, Snap seems to be a new product, right? Or now, hey, is Clubhouse a new product, right? So you do need to test it a bit. So even in Spec 11 ourselves, right? Like we were lucky that, you know, we were the first one hosting Cantonese events on Clubhouse. When me and my partners were talking, hey, should we do lead acquisition on Clubhouse, right? And then we were like, hey, like, what the heck is Clubhouse? Why do people actually want to talk on an app? But we were like, hey, like, we're not so sure about this. Maybe we should test just one event and see how it goes, right? And surprisingly, it went viral and it was pretty good. And then, but this channel died super fast, right? So, but still, like, in general, I think one side is that, hey, like, are you actually squeezing enough? Are you getting a good ROI in terms of the budget? And the second one is, if you see channel, to test it. But don't put too much faith into just doing acquisition and call it a day. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that. And I think sort of being aware about like the different channels that are like available and like really accessible, right? Like you mentioned Clubhouse, very organic, you know, it came up, but then as long as you're sort of in that ecosystem and you know sort of like what are the different waves around that you can leverage to boost that sort of acquisition process. I think that's one part that some people might not be very, you know, aware about or really know. So I think that's really cool. Another part of that funnel that I think I like to ask you to get your thoughts on is with retention, right? Because I think activation, sure, I think activation we can talk another time, but retention I think is also a very core part of that funnel, right? In regards to retention, how do you guide your customers to that first win, right? In terms of increasing that kind of retention in that funnel, what does that look like to you?
That's a great question. So honestly, I think retention is probably one of the hardest to do, and then directly correlate with, you know, if your startup is going to survive, or you know, if you're getting fundraising, because in the early stage or even in the mid late stage, like literally every stage in general, you need retention, because like what we just talked about is for acquisition, luckily you're going to overinvest, or even if you don't invest, right? Look at Clubhouse, like they're doing a great job at you know the referral hack, right? Like everybody, they get two referrals, and then you know they cause the FOMO, you know, the scarcity, right? But literally, like they just couldn't retain the users, and then retention is like it's tricky because there are so many areas that will affect if a user is going to retain. So I think majorly there are three areas. One is that, you know, is your product legit? So that one actually comes hand in hand with activation, meaning that, hey, do they actually try the core value for the first time and then they actually like it? They actually see it as essential stuff, right? So the core principle about that is actually like, are we actually providing enough incentive or enough value to the users that definitely live, they must live with us together, right? So if you're not providing enough value, they will just live organically. So, you know, there's nothing to complain about it. And the second one, I guess, is competition. So even if you're providing enough values, like, are you providing more than your competitors? Like, what is most in here that, hey, people actually have to come back to your platform versus other platform, right? So taking Google One or Google X as an example, like, if they don't have any competitor in Hong Kong, if they don't have Lala Move, in general, the retention will definitely be higher, right? So I think one side that product manager always or growth people always ignore is the changes in the competitive landscape. Because like if you're just providing one value, per se, if you're Uber, you're just serving one, right? Yeah. Then potentially, if somebody like Didi, they come to Hong Kong, then your core value will be gone, right? So are you going to provide more? For example, are you offering Uber Eats, right? So this is the second one. And then last one, which is most hidden, I think, is the frequency. So retention in general, when we have to talk about retained users or how often they return, right? The core principle not only is if they're returning, the second one is also how often they return, right? So if you have a product and then they just come back like every couple of years, right? So could you consider them as a retained user? So for example, if your app is in real estate, like if you buy a house, then you are done, right? So literally like the users is super happy. They buy a house through your app and then, you know, they're happily gaining some benefit from the app and then they're gone forever. So are they happy users? Are they active users? Are they retained users? I think yes, they're happy users, but no, they're not retained, right? So in a nutshell, I think like as a growth or as a product manager, like what we have to look at is not only on, you know, if the user's actually liking your product, but also second one is like, how do you actually evaluate the competitive landscape directly, indirectly? And the last one is even that users are happy, like, you know, are they coming back frequently enough? And then, you know, are they actually you know, have enough incentive to actually come back and provide value to your product. So I guess those three will come hand to hand together.
I really couldn't agree more, Vincent. I also want to dissect it a little bit. I think the first point that you mentioned, right, you brought up Clubhouse as an example. I like that as an example because it illustrates that, you know, you need that with retention and activation, it comes hand in hand, right? They were able to hack that sort of referral process. And so they were able to, you know, easily organically by virtue of the invite itself, the invite function, to come in, right? They're able to hack that process. But then ultimately, right, you know, and I know, you know, we're both, I don't think we're very active on Clubhouse, you know, these days. And that speaks to that sort of like hacking part of it. The second part, I think you're definitely right. I think, you know, as a product manager, you need to be extremely cognizant about the competitive landscape, right? Because actually, ultimately, right, some people think, okay, with retention, oh, it comes down to the core value of the product. Yes, it does to a certain extent, but then you also need, there are also other factors that can affect retention, like exactly like you said, with competitive landscape, right? If Lala Move didn't exist, then of course the retention for, you know, Google X would be constant, right? So that's something that we really need to be aware about. And I think that last part that you were just talking about in terms of, I think what we're really getting at is like metrics, right? Because you're saying the frequency, because that actually can look different from different companies, like from Pinterest to maybe even Facebook, right? Facebook, mm-hmm. maybe you'd measure by daily active users. Pinterest, maybe not really daily active users, you know, other metrics. For you, you know, how do we decide the metrics to track when it comes to growth, right? Obviously, you need to consider industry, you need to, you know, consider your product's value proposition. But, you know, with your experience, how do you personally do this?
This is definitely a very hard question. So we do get this time to time, you know, when we're talking to the executives and then they say, hey, like you're talking about growth, right? The hundreds of metrics, like some are doing good, some are doing bad. Like how are we doing on growth, right? So I think we have to be super careful about picking metric because in general, product or growth, especially growth, right? We don't want to pick a metric that, you know, doesn't reflect anything about what's happening. So let me put more context in here. So if you're in the finance industry, we always talk about leading indicator and lagging indicator, right? So especially some of the cases, if you're on the technical side, you know, you do see some trends in terms of, hey, what's going to happen later on, right? And happen like the stock market, the index is just kind of like a lagging indicator. So this is definitely also applied to startup. So if you're doing growth, right, and then you just focus on monetary values. For example, if you are in a SaaS business, you only look at monthly recurring revenue and annual recurring revenue, which definitely makes sense in terms of a company level, right? If you have to talk to investors or you have to talk to your shareholders, right? Or if you're in e-commerce, like you're only looking at the gross merchandising value, those are also legit. But if you're in growth, you couldn't just look at this, right? Because the metric itself have so many components that is uncontrollable and then it's quite hard to tell you what's going on. And more importantly, it's not a leading indicator that, you know, give you some hints about, hey, like what is a correlation that could bring in to value, right? So what will happen is if you're just focusing on the lagging indicator is that you'll miss out lots of opportunities. So one example that we always talk about is Shopify, is Spotify. So say Spotify is a subscription business, so either you're tracking by the number of subscribers or, you know, one layer up is subscriber times, you know, the monthly revenue that they're providing, right? So this is pretty much it. But this is in general a lagging indicator, right? Because if you're focusing on the number of subscribers, what you usually do is I would just do referrals, right? I would just do upselling. I would just test different pricing strategies. But that's pretty much it. If you want to take a deeper look into what's going on, right? Or what we just talked about, hey, how do you actually embed the DNA with the product? Is, hey, are we actually getting some leading indicator from that metric in general? So maybe, hey, what if I pivot it a bit to the leading indicator as if, you know, how much music they're actually listening to, or, you know, how many total minutes they're listening to per month. So the hypothesis in here is you have to do lots of math, but it's not rocket science. It's just, hey, are we having a good correlation? If they're listening longer, right, they will actually come back and pay, right? So in logic, it makes sense. And then in terms of the hypothesis, it also stands out in terms of the correlation, right? Then you actually pivot it from, hey, number of subscribers to, hey, can I actually push them to listen to music longer? because the longer they listen to you, the higher chance they're going to continue subscribe or going to subscribe to you, right? So this gives us lots of opportunities in terms of the experiment we can test, no matter in retention or in other areas, right? Because now I can do much better in the recommendations. I can do much better in terms of suggesting some products to them. I can do different personalizations. If it's Sunday, I'll give them different, you know, lo-fi vibes, right? So there are lots of areas that we can actually do to push the users to listen to music more, right? So some people call it leading indicator. Somebody call it the North Star metric. So I guess the core principle in here is, one is, you know, don't just pick on the lagging indicator. Those are good references that you have to take a look. But the second one is don't look at too much metrics, or else, you know, you're just not looking at the right metric at all.
Really look at what is drives that core value of your product, and you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, finance and the revenue side, right? It can also come down to, for example, like you said with Spotify, you know, minutes listened to, the different kinds of recommendations. I think that's perfect. Last two questions. Can you tell us about some growth hacks that maybe worked for you when you were trying to grow this funnel in your past experience?
Yeah, I mean, I've tried lots of stuff, and then you know, most of them actually failed. I guess I can share one that is quite interesting. That is not from Crook or not from Google when, but further back when I was at OneSky, which you know, is the first startup that I was working on growth. Just to recap a bit on what OneSky does is that OneSky is basically a localization platform, which, for example, if you're in an app or website, you can just, you know, plug in your code, and then, you know, they'll analyze all the languages, and then they'll help you to translate with machines or with actual people, right? So one core target audience are definitely games or startup, because in general, like, once, for example, a game, right, they did good, they will want to translate to a new language, and that will easily help them to capture a new market. But in general, game developers, they're mostly engineers or hardcore gamers. Like, not all of them are business driven, right? So if you have to ask them, hey, why don't you use this SaaS platform to translate more languages? Like, you only have to pay X, and then, you know, good value for money, right? Or, hey, globalization, localization, important stuff, they don't care. So our usual outbound strategies, which, you know, we reach out to them through systematic emails, follow-up, stuff like that. We are having a good benchmark rate, but definitely have lots of area that we can improve. So one hypothesis that we had is, hey, how about if they don't know how to calculate, we'll do it for them. How about, you know, we find a hacky way to install, to get the install numbers, right? To get the active numbers, and then to estimate how much revenue they're getting, right? And then how about, you know, we tell them, hey, if you translate to this language, you actually get, you know, this amount of extra values, extra users, extra ROI, right? And then they say, hey, this is ROI, like 1,000x ROI, and then it's hard for them not to pay for you, right? But what, when you heard of it, like, this is super hard, right? Because, you know, you need lots of engineers just to get the number from the download rate, right? Like, how much they can actually, you know, have you know, having number of users, right? You actually have to do all the calculations, you have to do all the automatic reports, stuff like that. So it might take months, maybe 3 to 4 months, to just test one idea, and it may not even work, right? So we were like, hey, how come, why don't we be more hacky, and then we just try a bit. So all we did is just some random calculations. So we just take some references, and then we guess it. Hey, like, we just guess our estimation correct. I think our accuracy is just like 30%, 40%. But say, hey, if we send to 10, right, how about 4 of them we actually think is legit? And then our 4, we just use that as a benchmark to see, hey, you know, what are the ratios compared to the traditional, right? So we just use like 1 week to test the whole new idea versus the traditional one. And then, yeah, lots of people email us, say, Vincent, screw you, this is entirely wrong, like, we don't trust this at all. But some people do say, hey, this number is legit, can you tell me the next step? So we use that as a benchmark to compare the past, and then we're actually getting 4x over the original conversions towards having a chat with us. So then we actually recruit some engineers, we buy some data to actually get the projection correct. But I guess the funny part about this is it actually aligned with what we're just talking about on, you know, how do we actually come up with the hypothesis, right? You know, understanding the users, but also not over investing into it. Like, the whole concept of this experiment in general is, like, we try to mimic, you know, what is the response of the users, which is the game developer, right? And then, you know, we try to get the benchmark and see how it goes. Once, you know, if it doesn't win, that's fine for us, right? We just invest in 1 week. But if it wins out, cases like this are 4x. So, you know, it's definitely crazy growth for us.
Yeah, definitely worth a try. No, I really like that example that you gave as well. And I think one of my key takeaways from what you just said is actually when you reduce that barrier of access, I think that helps to provide a platform for users to, you know, for you to growth hack, right? And and to access your user base a lot easier. Last question for today. I like to give my guests an explanation about the title of the podcast. So Scalescape, right? When we're breaking that title down, scale and scape, we want to, when it comes to building a product, right? As a product manager, you're an expert, right? We need to, when we're scaling it, we need to look at the landscape of things, right? The bigger picture, for example, the geography that we're in, you know, product market fit, even founder market fit, timing, the, you know, culture, society, a lot of different factors that can drive the scalability, right, of a product success. What is one tip that you have, Vincent, for entrepreneurs to scalescape their companies to success?
God, I when I first heard of the term, like, yeah, it was definitely a bad joke, but I was like, if you don't scale, you better escape. But I know this is bad, so.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, I think scalability is definitely critical, but I guess my core principle is still like what we talk about in the early stage, which is if you don't have product market fit, don't think about scaling at all, because you know that would just make you die faster. And the second one is once you put the market fit, scale as fast as possible, because product market fit in general changes. What we talk about is, for example, competition and stuff like that, right? And then once you hit the capacity, it's hard for you to think about what's next on spot. So plan about that upfront. And I guess the third one is, like, if you're a startup, like I guess, you know, one huge part of, you know, this podcast target audience are folks from Hong Kong. Definitely it's not the only target audience, but I'm from Hong Kong. So I do want to say, like, people think in general, Hong Kong, like, there's a scalability issues, right? For example, if you are B2C companies, like, you scale to Taiwan and then what's next, right? But I still do see lots of good products that actually could go places. So even, you know, if you try to scale to SEA or even to Europe, US, there's no problem. So just don't be afraid of scaling, because, like, if you stay in Hong Kong, the chances are that people will just come in Hong Kong and then they will conquer with you. So why don't you take a step, you know, forward and then just scale it up and then make sure that, hey, you know, your audience is actually the world. It's not just Hong Kong or just not just Asia per se.
Guiao, right? Hong Kong. Let's get it.
Yep, for sure. Guiao, Hong Kong. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Vincent, for coming in on the podcast. I really enjoyed it. I really learned so much. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks again for having me. Bye-bye.